I say what? Ho, this is Brian. Call me the Sunshine Woman Gardener. Coming to you from the Devil's Hole, a.k.a. Ramblin' Towers Dungeon Studio in scenic, but pissing down rain, Hesper, Ontario. And you are listening to Ramblin' Radio, episode 122. Ramblin' Radio is the only Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to RambleOnRadio.com for all your Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links I might mention during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble On Radio through iTunes. If you go to iTunes, matter of fact, if you're at any of these places where I mentioned, leave a review, leave a rating, a review. It helps other people find Ramble On Radio. You can find us on Podbean at I Am Brian Dammit. You can listen on Spreaker. And be sure to follow Ramble On Radio on Spreaker and now on Stitcher Radio. And you can check out Ramble On Radio on YouTube, follow Ramble On Radio on Facebook, Google+, and follow at Ramble On Blog on Twitter. I'm having technical difficulties, so I may stop and pause and flip around once in a while. But it looks like it's solved. There was something I was going to say. I did mention Spreaker. I for a while there, I was saying I think I was going to ditch Spreaker. There was not much to it, and they were cutting down their free available space. But I think I'll just keep rolling with it, but not without putting much effort into Spreaker. It's there. If you're one of the two or three people who listen on Spreaker, it'll still. It just means once a month I have to go and delete all the old stuff. But there it is. So you got to hear. Fooling with my headphones, because I think the only way I know if my technical difficulties pop up is if my headphones let me know if I stop hearing me. So I'm gonna do today with the headphones on full. What you heard intro was How Many More Times medley. That was the Fresh Garbage section, and that's a song name. It was a spirit song, and it came up quite a bit in the Stairway to Heaven lawsuit. Because it was spirit, the supposedly, you know, they were saying, well, we didn't really know any spirit, and it was evidence that they were playing spirit in the early days. That was from August 18, 1969, the second show at the Rock Pile in Toronto, a local show. And so this month, you know, last week, the anniversary thereof, local show, and topical with the Fresh Garbage. Try to throw it all, I try to give it all to you. And we are actually going to talk about the Stairway to Heaven lawsuit this week, specifically the testimony of the three surviving Led Zeppelin members. All three testified at the trial, and their testimony was made available about 2 weeks ago. So I'm kind of going to go over some of that with you. But let's do in history. Last time we ended with the second Nebworth was August 11, 79. August 12, 1969, almost exactly 10 years earlier, was the first time they ever played together, presumably in a Gerrard Street basement, although there is some controversy around that. August 15, 1979, In Through the Outdoor, released in the UK. August 18, 1969, Led Zeppelin plays two shows at the Rock Pile. Sorry. August 12, 1968, first time they ever played together at Gerrard Street basement. That would be 68, not 69. Otherwise, they were playing in Toronto 3 days later. August 18, 1969, Led Zeppelin plays two shows, Rock Pile in Toronto. Happy birthday, Robert Plant. August 20, 1948. He is 68 years old last week. The 22nd, 1979, In Through the Outdoor, released in the U.S. August 24th, 2008. Been almost 10 years. Jimmy Page, 8 years anyway. Jimmy Page and Leona Lewis played together at the closing ceremonies of the Beijing Olympics. I guess it would be 8 years, yeah. Beijing, London, Rio. August 25th, 1994. Page and Plant recorded MTV Unplugged at the Television Centre in London. August 26, 1970, John Paul Jones had returned to England for a family emergency. I believe it was his father. And the Cleveland show was moved to 5:30 so he could leave for England immediately after the show. And I think they did an encore with somebody else playing bass or something. I think there was some kind of story in there that I recall. August 26, 1983, Robert Plant kicks off his first solo North American tour at the Civic Center in Peoria, Illinois, I believe that is. So yeah, we're looking at, well, too many years, 33 years. It's Robert Plant kicked off his first, and I saw him on that first tour, and it was just Magic Night, I recall that. It was the end of August. It must have been fairly early. No, it was like September, first week in September, I think. It was stinking hot. It was got an unnaturally warm September week. And it was a Saturday night, and it was a great day. It was a great show. But yeah, it was kind of, nobody really knew what to expect, and just had a great time. And the 26th, 1994, August 26th, Page and Plant record a second night for their MTV Unplugged at London's television studio. So today they released, and I haven't heard it yet because trying to find a friggin' Canadian version of these things has become impossible. Today they did the release of Sunshine Woman from the BBC sessions. It's from April 14, 1969, the Rhythm and Blues section. I believe it's Alexis Corner's Rhythm and Blues session was the name of the show. And they did a song called Sunshine Woman. And having been released through, I don't worry too much about it, it goes through Rolling Stone, it winds up on SoundCloud, and you have to find your country's version. It becomes a real pain, actually. And I've given up trying over the last couple of years. Mostly because I know when I get up in the morning to go to work, I can go to iTunes and buy it. It becomes available the next day on iTunes after they do this kind of a release. So, Sunshine Woman, look for it in your iTunes or wherever you buy digital music. It's available now. It says about 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks before the BBC Sessions re-release is available. I talked a couple of weeks ago about the Japan 71 soundboard. Looks like it's making it by Empress Valley. Looks like it's making its way to the internet. It's a Tokyo show, by the way. It's not. I suggested it might have been in one of the Budokan shows, I think. It's a Tokyo show. It's the new soundboard. And I'm currently downloading. It's one of the things I think is causing my computer to be a bit problematic. And finally, there is yet another book. This one's called Celebration Day. It's a photographic book. I want to say a picture book, but it's not, a coloring book or a kid's book. It is. And this comes from David John DeCuto's Facebook page. I've tried to friend him, and so I could chat with him about coming on the show, but he didn't friend me back. So I'm going to have to try a roundabout-ish way, or kind of be more aggressively approach him, I guess. The Led Zeppelin book I wrote with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame photographer James Fortune, Celebration Day Shooting Led Zeppelin in America, 73 and 75, is out on Amazon. Feel free to pick up a copy and leave an honest review if you care to. It would mean a lot. Again, this is from his Facebook page, right? And it is available on Kindle. I believe it's only available on Kindle at this moment. But that is out there, and it's a book of the photographs of James Fortune, who did a fair bit of work photographing Led Zeppelin. And so that's available to pick up. And I actually went to pick it up and couldn't. But I did. It may have been too quick off the gun for me. And then it would allow me to do a sample, but the sample was so small, I had no good gauge of what the hell was going on there. So I will try and find out more about that book, have a peek at it. Maybe get somebody to come and talk to me. We'll see how that goes. All right. So a couple of weeks ago, weeks maybe more ago, Rolling Stone published the trial transcripts, the testimony of Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, and Jimmy Page. So I went and I got on and actually copied it all and turned it into a big PDF file so I could read it, or actually four different PDF files. And I made some notes on it, so I thought there was, because I'm sure most people aren't going to sit and go through it, and I just decided I would, for the purposes of this show, I will do the dirty work, so you don't have to, as it were, And, you know, a lot of it is, probably a good quarter of it is the lawyers bickering or the lawyers sorting out what evidence is what, what's trial, you know, that sort of thing. Objections and overrulings and sustainings and a lot of the testimony, especially when Jimmy Page was testifying. There was a lot of that. Now, Robert Plant and Jumbo Jones' testimonies each is about 25 pages on my PDF. Not long. It took about 10, 15 minutes to read. Jimmy Page, a different story. I did two different files for him. One of them was 130 pages. The other one was 80-something. So it was, I think it was 205 pages total. So it's a lot more intense, a lot more complex. And there was a couple of points I really wanted to get. But I kind of have, there's just some interesting testimony through it. So I'm going to read you some quotes from it. And please forgive me as I do this because my PDF reader wouldn't allow me to highlight. So I kind of had to bookmark the page that I want. And so as I go to it, I'm going to have to quickly glance at it to figure out what I'm looking at, what I'm trying to get. But there was an important point I wanted to get at. The lawsuit involves not Stairway to Heaven as we know it. It's not Stairway to Heaven that you've been hearing on the radio for 30 years. That is falls well outside of the statute of limitations. There's a 3-year statute of limitations in California. And as well, the song was recorded, and they spent a lot of time fussing about this, and mastered in London. So it seems like the L.A. connection doesn't really apply to it. It seems like the big fuss was made about two things. The remaster, when they released the deluxe edition, they had a version that was mastered in L.A. That's the version under dispute. That's the only version under dispute. So people talked about, oh, they've made $100 million. If he gets some of that $100 million that they've made off Stairway to Heaven over the years, he would not get any of that money that they've made off. Only money that would be available to whoever, if had they won the suit, would be based on the deluxe edition. And I should have it with me, shouldn't I? And ta-da, through the magic of the pause button, I do have it with me. How do you like them apples? So it is just called Stairway to Heaven Sunset Sound Remix. So Sunset Sound is the LA studio where they, let me make sure I've got my notes on this, right? The version of Stairway to Heaven that we've heard that we danced in grade 7 too and stuff, It was mastered at Island Studios in London. After the Sunset Sound ones, when they brought them back to London, they didn't sound good. So they re-released the Sunset Sound ones. That's the only one that's in dispute, the companion audio version, which means the only money that would be available. And by the way, I'm not a lawyer, so I'm kind of working through this, but I think this is what I got of it. The only money that would be available to the plaintiffs, would be any money made on the composition of Stairway to Heaven from the deluxe edition sales only. So only if a radio station plays this version of Stairway to Heaven, not the usual version of Stairway to Heaven, which I haven't heard any radio stations do other than, say, that first week, would any kind of airplay monies come. Furthermore, so if you went out and bought the LP version of Led Zeppelin 4, but it wasn't the deluxe edition, just the remaster, they wouldn't get money from that. They would only get from the deluxe edition CDs, LPs, or from the box, the super deluxe edition. And they would be entitled to, I gather, about 1/16 to a cut of 1/16. So it would be 1/3 of 1/16 sort of thing, and would be kind of the way that would work, I think. So just it's a point that a lot of people didn't seem to get on, and that really struck me. And they spent a lot of time ascertaining where was it recorded, where was it written, where was it mastered, and going over them. And it's because that matters that it was in L.A. because the suit was in L.A. Okay, so I'm going to go on this. Let's go. I'm going to start at the last thing I actually scribble down. And yes, there will be some futzing around as I do this. I apologize. But this was the most interesting, maybe, part of it. They play a tape of John Paul Jones, Jimmy Page teaching John Paul Jones the song, Stairway to Heaven. So he's going, okay. And so he starts playing a section, and it sounds like from the description that he's playing the middle section. And he's trying to, and so they're going over it and over it and over it. And then in the end, they also do that, and he's going over it and over it so Jones can get it. And he's on the electric piano doing this stuff. And, but there's a point where he says, let me find it. Let me find where I want to start. So you're going to hear, is this is the very first sort of introduction, if you like, for me to John Paul Jones, and we're running through. And I think right now is the time to record it as a point of reference. It's like a sketchbook, you know? And on this as well, there is, get this, there is a section that I try out that gets jettisoned after this tape. There is a section of Stairway to Heaven that was written that gets cut. So original workings of Stairway to Heaven, there was in fact, you know, there's kind of the intro acoustic section, there's a middle section, there's the bridges, I got a guitar here, I'm not sure if this is a 12 string, and they're awful for tuning, but there's, right, so there's that, and there's, when he's singing, and then you get the fanfare, he calls it, and then, right, so that's the, kind of call it five sections, including the intro, alright. There was a sixth section. There was something else. There was another musical fragment in there that none of us have ever heard. To me, that falls under the category of, oh, wow. Wow, there's a section that none of us have ever heard of Stairway to Heaven. Now, it got jettisoned early. Obviously, he thought it wasn't, it doesn't sound like they recorded it or anything. Matter of fact, he specifically says they jettisoned immediately after this recording. All right, so here's Robert Plant on writing the lyrics of Stairway to Heaven. And he's kind of been talking a bit about it, he's babbling a bit. He says, from my angle as a singer, you either have a kernel of an idea which you can latch on to and start developing a focal and a melodic aspect, or you have to wait a little bit and see whether there's something there that you can actually, you know, hook up with. So that particular evening, I sat with Jimmy by the fire and he began playing, and I had a little couplet lyrically, if you like, in tempo, fitted what into what he was playing. So I just started developing that into two lines and four lines, and then on slowly opening it up. What was the couplet? Plant says, oh gosh. Question is, would you rather I not ask? And he answers, there's a lady who sure like glitters as gold when she's buying a Stairway to Heaven. So he basically speaks off the air, possibly sings. I was really trying to bring in that aspect. Says now, man, I think the way that the mood of the place, everything fell for me. I was really trying to bring in that aspect of Welsh, of the beauty of the remoteness of pastoral Britain. And I'd visited previously on albums like Ramble On, was a song we played on Led Zeppelin 2, and That's the Way, which is a song which is coming of the same mindset for me. So, Stairway, I wanted to try and bring in some of the nature, the natural, old, unspoken Celtic reference into the piece. So as the song developed, it became more and more evident that I could actually change and open up my contribution. Meanwhile, the guys were working on stuff with all, you know, between themselves and opening up the song, and it's a transition into something that was really quite flowering, and that was so on and so forth. So the lawyer, Mr. Malfoy Draper, come on, let's face it. he asked them about hanging out with a Mr. Andes, and I would have to fart around to figure out who that is, but I'm guessing Mr. Andes was in spirit, and I guess testified maybe that he had hung out with Robert Plant sometime. And Robert Plant says, well, I mean, I've seen the adventures in the last week. I don't remember. I've no recollection of mostly anybody I've ever hung out with, but I'm not trying to be funny, you know. I mean, you're a hard-hitting guy, but I don't remember anything like that. I mean, you know, you meet, and I heard what's been going down. You meet so many people in these environments that pass by and through. And I'm sure Meritus, charming people, but in the middle of the chaos and the hubbub, How are you going to remember one guy from another if you don't see him for 40 years? And kind of the final Robert Plant bit is, question is, your memory is good today about events that happened in the past than it would have been years ago closer to the events. Robert Plant says, well, I don't remember now and I don't remember then. And then just a bit later in Redirect, he asks, you referred to Bonzo. Who's Bonzo? John Bonham. So that's kind of Robert Plant's testimony. I skipped over a few things, but he talks a bit. They pull out a lot of old interviews and then start trying to hammer them on. Well, you said this at this interview, not that. And, well, you know, you say stuff in interviews. For one, you say stuff in interviews. It's hardly the same thing as testifying under oath. Page actually makes a point in one of his where he says, you know, well, in those days, reporters, they wrote everything down in notebooks. So, you know, it's not like nowadays where everything's recorded and they got to repeat it a number of times. So that may be so. Okay. John Paul Jones talks about performing professionally. I was in smaller bands when I was 16. We were doing local dances and then American Air Force bases around England. When you were 17, were you a member of a band? Yes, it was a fairly major band. We had 3 top 10 instrumental hits and toured England. And that would be with Jet Harris and Tony Meehan, who were in fact the rhythm section for another band called The Shadows. And that was a much bigger affair. And The Shadows were, I actually have a couple of their albums from England. They were very big for many years, very influential in England. And were Cliff Richard's backup band, actually. This is where they started, I believe. So, yeah, he talks about going into production, and, does being a session musician require creativity? Yes, especially in the rhythm section. If you were a string player or trumpet player, you would have all the notes set out for you. You would pretty much play what's written. In the rhythm section, you had much more freedom, where you're just given charts, which set out chord symbols, which gave you the harmony, and then you would improvise your parts. Could you please tell us some of the recording artists you were involved with as a session musician or arranger prior to joining Led Zeppelin? Okay, it was musical director to Mickey Most, blah, blah, blah. So Herman, Donovan's, Lulu, Rolling Stones, She's a Rainbow. What was the one? Oh, yes, this was one. Kind of Hush on Dusty Springfield's recordings. Did you work on the music for Goldfinger? Oh, yes. I was playing bass on Goldfinger, and actually Jimmy was playing guitar. By Jimmy, I mean Jimmy Page. Jimmy Page, yes, we sat next to each other. So Jimmy Page and John Paul Jones sat next to each other in those Goldfinger sessions. And Jimmy Page has often told the story of Shirley Bassey fake passing out. And he also was in on the sessions for Little Games, was John Paul Jones. That was something I didn't actually know. Or at least he says he was. Maybe he's lying. And then there's this, and there was a bit in here I thought was also interesting. I was doing a lot of work. How did you become a member of Led Zeppelin? Well, I was doing a lot of work and probably too much work. And I think my wife could see the warning signs. And she actually read that Jimmy Page was forming a group. He had left the Yardbirds and was forming a band. And she said, call him up. And so I did, and I said, hi, Jim, do you need a bass player? And he went, yeah. And then he laughs. He said he was going north to see a singer, to hear a singer who he thought also knew a drummer. And of course, the singer was Robert Plant, drummer was John Bonham. That's interesting because the story has always been that they kind of didn't have a drummer. Robert Plant got into the band, and then, you know, they kind of said, okay, it's all kind of set, but we do need a drummer. And then Robert Plant said, well, I know a guy. But this implies that they knew that they knew at least about John Bonham. They knew where Robert Plant knew a guy. Before they ever went to see Robert Plant. Okay. Before you even play, this goes to our intro, by the way. Fresh Garbage was a piece by Spirit that Led Zeppelin played the riff of, and they talk a lot about the difference between playing the song and playing the riff, but they used the riff in the medley of how many more times in their first tour. So in 19, it kind of doesn't say, before you even played any show on U.S. soil as Led Zeppelin, you were familiar with the band Spirit by playing a portion of their music. fresh garbage, correct? No. You played the song. You played a portion of the composition as part of your live set. Yeah. And you did that before you played your first show on U.S. soil, correct? Yes. As I understand it, yes. Okay, and you, in fact, learned that piece of music, I believe, from your radio or from the TV. Well, it was either the radio or TV. Did any of the members of Led Zeppelin introduce you to or learn? I can't recall. Now, did you introduce the song to the band or did someone else? I can't recall. And of the thousands of artists you could have chosen to cover their music, you covered a song by a relatively somewhat unknown band at that point called Spirit. And he goes, what I did, after, you know, some lawyerly gobbledygook, and what I did was just pick a two-bar bass riff, which popped out of whatever. However I heard it, I played that. I didn't know who it was, what it was. It was a catchy little riff. It had a little quirky time thing, and it caught my ear. So let me see what else I have. Somewhere on this page there was... Yes, it was just the way he just kind of continues. It was just a two-bar bass riff. I didn't know where it was from. I just heard it. So that's talking about playing fresh garbage. And that's kind of the meat of, like I said, Jumbo Jones. It's 20 pages, and it's it really gets through in about 10 minutes reading. It's not a substantial testimony, really. But a lot of it, fresh garbage was a lot of it. And his experience as a musician prior to joining Led Zeppelin was a big chunk of it. Okay, and then we get to Mr. Page, who spent a long time testifying. And again, please forgive me as I try to find stuff as I'm working through this. Okay, it was after the internet. So when did you discover you came into possession of this album? He owns Spirit's first album, which has Taurus on it. It was after the internet comparisons came up, which was a few years ago. My son-in-law brought it to my attention that there was a comparison of Stairway to Heaven and a Spirit song, and I said, I'd like to hear that. I don't do the internet or the computer, so he played it to me. And initially what happened was there was some music there which I had never heard before, like an orchestra. And I said, well, what is this? And then it goes into a sort of rundown on acoustic guitar, and he said, this is the Spirit song. So I knew I had never heard it before, but what I did do within a week of that, I went to the location where all my records are, and I thought, you know, I'll have a look. Basically, I'm going to have a look and see what Spirit records I've got. And what happens is, and I know that in my mind, that there are two records I had, which is the second album and the third album. And it turns out I've got the 12 Dreams of Dr. Sardonicus and even a Spirit Live album, which is a double album. I have no recollection of that whatsoever, but there's this album, the first album. I don't know how it got there or anything. So he talks quite a bit about... how much Spirit he has in his collection. He does say this at one point. Yeah, because of this trial, I've checked to see how many records I've got. And there's a count as of yesterday. Because he probably picks them up, right? It's 4,329 albums, 5,882 CDs. And I can assure you, I haven't heard, he starts to say. He's basically saying, I haven't listened to it all. Like, you know, and anybody who collects music knows this, right? You have stuff that you just have never listened to. It's just the way it works. Down towards page 16 of 135 here. We're getting there. No. I've already done that. So we're working way down the pages now here. Page 49. Do you recall, you said you'd never seen Spirit Alive. Okay. Do you recall saying in response to what do you think of the American pop scene, which was an interview in New Musical Express, he says, Blood, Sweat, and Tears aren't my cup of tea. Spirit do some really nice things on albums. They give a really nice atmosphere when they play, and I always enjoy seeing them. Basically, Jimmy says, I've never seen them. I keep telling you it doesn't. Well, I can't be sure whether I really said it or not. He says, well, doesn't it refresh your memory? No, it doesn't. there's a lot of back and forth between them at sometimes, and let us, I wouldn't say snippiness, but it's not always the friendliest, I think. In those days, they were still jotting things down on notepads when you were doing interviews. It wasn't like it is today. You know how journalists were doing things. So I can't remember an actual interview, and I can't say that I said that. And this is a couple of pages later, but they're bickered back and forth a bit on whether or not he actually said he's seen Spirit live. You don't remember, and he says, to be clear, you don't remember the interview, you don't remember giving the interview, correct? Absolutely. You don't remember seeing Spirit live. I didn't see Spirit live. So you dispute the accuracy of this quote. And then the judge comes and says, no, he didn't. He says he may have said it, he may not have said it, he just doesn't know. So there's a lot of bits about him actually seeing Spirit. Did he see Spirit or not? And they do get down in the trial that Spirit played in the first the tour, the first bunch of shows they did in the U.S. Spirit was on the set list as well as Vanilla Fudge, which I don't think anybody kind of really knew. I suppose the people who were there. Yeah, I don't want that. He talks a bit about being a studio musician, but it kind of is not not the meat of the thing, I think. Well, I didn't think we did open. Did you forget that you opened for Spirit in the last 30 years? I didn't think we did open for Spirit. And actually, yeah, okay. This is what I'm saying. As far as Denver, I thought it was Vanilla Fudge, but here I am now. This is 1969. You're saying, and I guess he... but he's talking about a quote that from an article where Jimmy Page says, and this is in 1970, so this is a couple of years later, you know, it's kind of funny. Our first tour around, we played second fiddle to other groups. Last time, we were the second group and Spirit was the third. Now we've gone an up a notch to where Spirit is second billing. June 1969 is when that was. So everybody's, they say Spirit co-headlined the show, and now they're saying that Spirit opened before Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin didn't even have an album out yet, but he's saying there that Spirit was before them, that they were third on the bill, not first or not second. But the lawyers don't seem to catch that discrepancy, and there's a couple of times when I think, how come the lawyers didn't catch that and say, hold on a minute. And we get back to another... Do you dispute the accuracy of the quote? Well, I don't really remember the context of it's referring to what it's referring to here. We get into a lot of that sort of thing with the, just pulling a quote out and saying, you said this. And well, okay. I guess I did. I don't know. I wanted to get into this. This is a bit meaty, and this is a bit technical, but... I think it's here I want to go... he goes on and on and on about an E, and I'm really struggling to figure out why nobody jumped in here and said, wait a minute, you're wrong. And I think the point is because Spirit's Taurus doesn't go to an E before the A minor. Are you familiar with the term cadence? Jimmy Page, can you explain what you mean by cadence? When you're running down a chord progression, it's how the song resolves and goes back to the tonic. Jimmy says, yeah, go ahead. Are you familiar with the rundown in Stairway to Heaven? Well, yeah. It doesn't go to the fifth, correct? I don't know what you mean by the fifth. Well, you have the first, which is an A minor, yeah, and it doesn't ever go to the E, correct? Blah, 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 and there's objections and stuff. Doesn't Stairway to Heaven chord progression does not go to the fifth. It skips over the fifth and goes back. But you mean the note of the fifth, that's right. That would be an A, right? No, it's absent because it catches up at the end of the whole first phrase. It's included there. You've got your rundown coming from A through F sharp. F sharp goes dum, dum, dum. And then it goes dum, dum, dum. At that point, that's where you get the E coming in. So, and they keep bitching about that there's no E in here, is what it boils down to. But actually there is. And that's, I wanted to, and I have my guitar here for you. So you know what I mean. The final chords, never mind the first bit. So it's the D. And remember, there's this rundown. Okay. Right? So, here's the D. F major 7. So what he's saying is that normally you would go to your E chord before you hit that E minor, and that would be a resolution. It makes it, and this does resolve to the A minor, and it resolves the A minor by going to an E minor. Now, a lot of people would call that a G, just if the notes are B, G, and B. So there's no E in the notes. But from a chord perspective, if you listen to it, that's an E minor to A minor. So he resolves that E. That's exactly how they resolve it. It's not a G. If you play a G, yeah, that works too. But you see, so the E minor is there. And they're going on about it. And I don't know why somebody's just saying, hey, he does go to a bloody it is kind of an E chord there. So anyway, if you're reading through the testimony and you're not technical and you're looking at that going, okay, I guess that's true. It's not true. The E minor is there. It can be a G, can be an E minor. It can go either way on that. And I don't know how to explain that to somebody who doesn't know any technical music, except to say different chords are a combination of notes. And sometimes your combination, it can have various answers. How's that? I don't know a real world comparative for you. Just to say that a G chord is a G, B, and D. An E minor chord is E, G, B. So notice they share the G and the B. In this particular case, that's what we get. We get a B, a G, a B. There's no E, there's no D. So whether it's a G or an E minor, you can call it either. It can go either way, is what it boils down to. It's both, because it's an incomplete chord. And some chords, just by the very nature of how you build chords up, sometimes a chord is this or a chord is that, and it can be either way, depending on what you're playing in the bass or one note in or out. One note changes very slightly and it becomes a slightly different chord, and it's how you approach the chord sometimes changes I was doing something this week and it was a D, and I realized it's also a B minor 7. But if you got to put that B in there for it. But otherwise, it's the same chord. But very different uses. And it's just the main. And this particular song required you to jump into the minor 7 and kind of bounce between the two. And it was, I kind of never clicked before that those two things are that close. So what happens in music and in guitars. So anyway, that was just I wanted to point that out, that it does resolve to the E, even though the lawyer says it doesn't. The lawyer's not a music expert or something. But I presume the experts got on and actually said at some point, said, no, that resolution happens. So he tries to get him to say basically, oh yeah, it's the same song. So they play a bit of Taurus. You reference giving you an idea to use the Stairway to Heaven. I don't think I said that. I think you said like that. Did you recall that? That's not exactly right. But what I did say is that it is the same. This is Chim Chim Marie. It's the same four note rundown, or five note rundown as the Stairway. So your testimony is the Chim Chim Marie inspired you to write Stairway to Heaven. No, I didn't say that. Is your testimony you use composition elements in Chim Chim Marie to write Stairway to Heaven? No. Is it your testimony? Jim Marie and Stairway to Heaven have similarities to them. And he says, no, not verbatim, no. And then so... So yeah, I mean, they use Chim Chim Ree as a piece of work that uses the same kind of element, the chord, descending, the minor chord with descending bass line. And he's taken that to mean he was inspired by Chim Chim Ree to write Stairway to Heaven. it's so obvious that he's just fishing for some weird answer or something, or he's trying to make him look absurd, I guess. I actually think it's what he's up to, but... some of the questions just get silly, and probably both lawyers are guilty of this. Probably all lawyers are guilty of this, but this one seems particularly. This the judge quite often was going, you should have organized this before we showed up in court, and kept telling them, you're wasting the court's time. You have X number of time to, you know, there's a time limit on this witness, and you're wasting yours. And he really, really badgers them to try and say they wrote Stairway to Heaven at Brongniart instead of at Headley Grange. And I'm not so sure what the significance, he thought the significance of that. But he pulls out an old interview where he says he wrote it, he did the intro, the little intro at Brongniart. And he says, now does that refresh your recollection that when Stairway to Heaven was originally written, it was written... you in a cottage with an acoustic guitar, and that's all there was to the intro. No, it doesn't refresh my memory at all, because that's incorrect. Spends quite a lot of time on that. I don't like that. Sometimes you're made... Oh, I did like this, yeah. How many times did you meet Randy California? I have no recollection of meeting Randy California. How many times did you interact with Randy California? I have no recollection of meeting him or interacting with him. And he says, you remember hanging out with him at an after party in the UK in 73 after they performed there? And Jimmy actually goes into a fairly long bit about bass player Mark Andes. Remember, that's after 73. And he goes into a bit of rejection. But we were between tours and... you know, I lived quite a bit away from London. I wasn't living close to London. So we were between tours, and I can't find the exact testimony here. So, he says, I assure you, I didn't go to London to see any shows in that 3 weeks I was off. I spent it with my daughter was 2 months old. And, you know, I spent it with my partner and my daughter. Okay, so the next question. Interesting. Oh, here we go. I'm thinking, there's a whole page of argument. Why did I highlight this one? But actually, I see it at the bottom. Do you recall signing a record deal with Rhino Entertainment where you received $10 million? So, there was some money stuff going on here. And I thought it was interesting. Only in that... profit and loss for the year... ended March 31st, 2015. This is the their publishing company, which brings in the money from the music and then disperses it to the actors or the four of them, the estate of John Bonham plus John Paul Jones, Jimmy Page, Robert Plant. And it says £6.6 million going in, and for administrative expenses, it has £6.6 million leaving, net profit $0 at the end of this period. It actually says £6.6 million and $6.6 million. I'm going to guess it's pounds all around. And later on it says about 6.6. So, yeah, it filters right through, right? Profit zero, blah, blah, blah. But that's what kind of led Zeppelin made on selling records and stuff in 2014, 2015, the year leading up to March 31st, 2015. So their year end is March 31st. So 2014, from April 1st to March 31st, £6.6 million, about $10 million, is what they rolled in. So in case you're wondering how much money the guys make now, that was all. He had to be very careful with that because a lot of it was proprietary information and stuff. But I don't think I'm going to go with this. It's just a long explanation of what mixing is. And I'm not sure that's relevant to anything much. Yeah, no, that's fine. I've got a bit here that's basically what I mentioned earlier about how it seems to be really relevant where they recorded and what the 3-year statute of limitations is a big deal. Okay, when did you start composing music for Stairway to Heaven? Well, it's somewhere between May and August of 1970. I moved houses during that period. So in between touring or whatever, I would say, in between location of Pangbourne and Berkshire and my house in Sussex, which is in Plumpton. Okay, did you work on music for Stairway to Heaven at those houses? Well, I was working on various ideas all the time, to be honest with you. If I wasn't on the road, it's fussing me here. I'm sorry, I'm having technicals here. So if I wasn't on the road, it gave me balance between the sort of loud music on tour, and I'd sort of turn the coin and play acoustic guitar when I wasn't on the road, and I would be preparing for the next album that was coming. So yes, acoustic guitar. Which parts of Stairway to Heaven did you compose first? Yeah, this was interesting. Well, I seem to remember that I had the fanfare first, the idea of going into a solo, which is pretty radical that no one had done something like that. During the build through, yes. Okay, at some point did you work on, say, Stairway to Hadley Grange? Yes. Basically, I had the ideas for a map, if you like, putting this together, all the sections. And I've said this earlier, I wanted to sort of reach a climax at the end. There were no lyrics involved, so it was really just a sequence and the mapping of the music and the sections. It was an ambitious piece, and I must say with Led Zeppelin, if you came up with ideas or somebody had a riff or something, if it wasn't very good, it would be jettisoned, and you moved on very quickly to something else. So because this was an ambitious idea, I wanted to make sure, rather than just me trying to plow through on my own with nobody knowing it, I thought the best thing to do was get together with John Paul Jones, so at least there would be two members that would know it from the beginning to the end, so I started to routine him. So it gets on to about Hedley Grange. So as I understand your testimony a few minutes ago, the first person you introduced Stairway to Heaven to was John Paul Jones. He goes on about the ambitious map I was trying to establish, something which sort of break the musical rules. It's more classical music you'll find this, not necessarily a pop or what one loosely termed rock. So I basically wanted to make sure that I could run through the various ideas I had, and I only had the idea to glue them together. But as I say, I wanted to have an ally who would know by the time we got together with John and indeed Robert that it would be starting to shape up as a piece. So anyway, and then they introduced the tapes, which is really, really cool. Wish we could hear the tapes. Okay, so listening to the tape, you're going to hear me introducing it, routining it so that John Paul Jones gets to memorize it. And the bits you will hear, it's the same story. I'm laying out the overall plan for it. John Paul Jones is on the electric piano because I wanted electric piano to come in at some point. So what you're going to hear is the sort of introduction for me and John Paul Jones we're running through, and I think right now is the time to record it at a point of reference. It was like a sketchbook, you know? And then there was this section that I try out that gets jettisoned. And that's the cool part. Okay. So I think that's all I got. There's not nothing else, Mark. So let's leave it at that. That's some of the interesting, what I found some of the more interesting testimony of all the guys who played. A lot of talk about how they developed Stairway to Heaven, a lot of talk about recording together. Some of the money stuff, and a few of the revelations, including that there was this jettison section. And I really did think it was important, the point of interest, that it was just the stuff, just the bonus track from the companion audio disc is the only relevant version of Stairway to Heaven in this court trial. Have they lost, or should they lose an appeal? From a financial standpoint, it doesn't go back to 1971. It's only the companion audio disc that would be affected, the monies from that would be affected. All right, so that's that. We're gonna wrap. That was a lot more reading and stuff. I was not sure how long this one was gonna take or how it was gonna roll through, but it was a lot more reading than usual. But I hope it was okay. I hope it was okay. And that's it for Ramble on Radio, episode 122. Check RambleOnRadio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links mentioned in today's podcast. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, Google+, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes. If you're in iTunes, leave a review, drop a few stars. Matter of fact, on all these places where you can hear it, follow me, leave a review, do whatever it takes. It helps with placement. It helps other people to find us. Listen on Stitcher Radio and on Spreaker. Be sure to follow Ramble on Radio on Spreaker and download it from I Am Brian Dammit on Podbean. Check it out at Ramble on Radio on YouTube. Thanks for listening to Ramble on Radio, episode 122. Keep it coolin', babies. Keep it coolin', baby. Keep it
coolin', baby. I'm sure there'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.